Hey guys, a little word of warning at the top of the episode. We had a little bit of a recording issue with the very back end of this episode, and it was during the discussion of the TV show Billions. So while we might say that we're going to discuss that show this week, we unfortunately were unable to actually discuss the episode because I had to remove the audio. But we will be back next week to actually discuss the first season of Billions on Showtime, and the rest of the episode is good to go, so I hope you enjoy. Episode 77 of the TV Dudes, recorded April 13th, 2016. We love money. We love your money. Give us your money.
No!
Love and money. Money love. Back with another episode, guys.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'm not fully sure what title we decided to go with. I sure did spout off a bunch of them.
Yep,
but they were all good.
But we are talking about today togetherness and billions. So money, love, those are common themes there.
Yes.
And we're talking about Better Call Saul, as usual.
Yes. Money, love are themes in there, too.
Yes,
they are, especially in this week's episode.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So... Before we get into all that, guys, what's been going on lately?
I don't know.
Trying to catch up on TV, really. I mean, like, I'm like halfway through Transparent, and...
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that show.
I utterly forgot about Transparent.
No, it's really, you know, it's still the same stuff, but again, you know, I think one of the things, remember what it was about 3 or 4 years ago, people talking about, well, the whole anti-hero thing.
Yeah.
It's like getting to be a drag. I'm getting to the point... with, like, people I really despise watching them on TV. Like, why do I have to watch this person that is a bad person?
Unlikable protagonists?
Yeah. It's like, I mean, even...
if they can't make him charming, that's the whole thing. It's all dependent upon if... I mean, I can root for a bad person if you make him charming.
Yeah.
Right.
Which, give me a Vic Mackey, I'll root for him every day.
Or give me the guys in Terriers. You know? I can kind of, you know, root for one of them, but, except when they need the money.
That's a perfect example of where I thought you would be conflicted.
But it was done so well. I wanted to see them get... you know, their justice due, you know?
Yeah.
But that and Hap and Leonard, and all these miniseries coming up on AMC, the one with the guy from Loki, the guy who plays Loki.
Tom Hiddleston.
Hugh Laurie looks good. So it's just like all that stuff, plus all the returning great TV coming up. And I did have to, like, really force myself not to watch... not The Walking Dead, but the other terrible show.
Fear the Walking Dead.
Only because KCRW had this really great interview with Cliff Curtis. It was really, really cool, and I really liked that guy.
I heard conflicting reports about this. Like, was the return kind of good?
I don't know. I haven't seen all the first season.
I don't know. I saw the whole first season. It was okay.
They said that in the second season, they moved to these people being on a boat.
Yeah, because that's what happened. That's how
and
they escaped.
They thought it was going to be boring, but somehow they managed to make it fairly compelling.
Okay.
I might watch it because I like Cliff Curtis and
there's
Kim Dickens a lot.
There's plenty of talent on that show.
Yeah. So maybe
but they burned me, and the franchise has burned me.
Oh no!
To the point where I'm like, do I want to?
I don't think I'm going to go back when it comes back. I don't think.
Round about the time Halloween is hitting, and I'm looking for some horror stuff to watch. I'll catch up on Walking Dead, and I'll probably watch what is available. Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah. I never have Halloween season hit me with a feeling of wanting to see horror movies.
Yeah, I don't so much, but usually all my friends are watching stuff, and I'm like, I want to watch something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and so I might. The odds are good I'll be watching something else, and I won't. But it's possible if I go back, that's when I'll go back.
Right. You're gonna watch another season of Terriers. You're gonna
rewatch Terriers.
Yeah. So hey, we're the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
And I'm Greg.
And yeah, like I said, we're talking about Billions and Togetherness, which has had a series finale.
Yeah.
Randy's bummed about it.
I'm bummed. Do you guys care? I care.
I'm grateful to have another one off my list.
Oh, man.
That's how I feel about it.
This was one of my favorite shows, and I'm really sorry to see it go.
I just think it's... I didn't like this season, but I would have watched the third season. I just thought, for some reason, I don't know, HBO, every once in a while, they pull like this. Yeah, we're done with the show. And you're like, wait, why?
When they want to keep they want to keep their showrunners in line. I think they're like, you know what? You think you're safe? No, man. You might go tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, it just
but they keep losing shows too.
Yeah,
like they had the whole problem with Westworld.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, what was the other show that's just ending? I mean, Game of Thrones is still running, but Leftovers. Leftovers ending this season, and.
But there's always more shows coming.
I mean, and Vinyl was not doing as well as they thought, and they just ditched Terrence Winter as the showrunner. And they put some other guy in who's like never actually run a show before.
But honestly, right now HBO has Game of Thrones, Veep, and
Silicon Valley.
And then they're good.
And John dismiss John Oliver.
And
quite frankly, I'm really looking forward to seeing what Bill Simmons does.
Yeah, so they've got plenty in the pipeline. They've got plenty of talent holding court.
Isn't John Stewart doing something with them soon?
He is. He's supposed to be doing like online stuff on HBO.
Yeah, that's
now.
The thing. They've got talent development right now, and they've got solid hits and buzz shows, so they can afford to be a little more. This is not the between Sopranos and Boardwalk Empire years where they just like they're trying to find their next hit.
John from Cincinnati
and Rome and
stuff. And ending Rome was actually really good.
It was good. There's plenty of good stuff, but there was stuff that wasn't getting buzz.
Right. I just feel they're sweating a little. They should sweat a little because
do you think? Because they got plenty of stuff to keep people coming.
Game of Thrones has two more seasons left, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but everybody.
That's 2 years to develop stuff. They got plenty of time to find their hit.
But Game of Thrones is, if there's any TV show that really has a prestige in, like, the cultural, like, I guess the way the guys at The Watch would say, the belt right now, it's got to be Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Because even over, I mean, I love Better Call Saul. You know, I love Fargo. I love my favorite show is still The Americans.
But the show everybody talks about
is Game of Thrones. Like, you give
throw and out Walking
references.
Dead. That's the funny thing about Walking us not Dead. Being Walking Dead fans. Walking Dead has the belt. When it is on, everybody's watching it. But if you talk to random people who aren't big TV nerds.
Right, they know.
And I do. I talk to people who don't watch a lot of TV.
Right.
A lot of people watch The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Funny thing, even funnier thing.
Yeah.
This last weekend, I ran a 10K.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
No. Yeah.
It destroyed me.
I did not run a 10K.
Neither did I.
But when I was running, there was someone holding up a sign that said, "Run like Negan is chasing you."
Oh,
and
boy.
Everyone passing was laughing. Everyone got it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, everyone knows a very small, brand new character on Walking Dead.
It's the water cooler show. It is what Dallas was when we were growing up, Greg.
Yeah.
It's the show everybody knows.
Right.
Yeah.
You are right. But I think the discerning TV taste really knows, we'll talk at least Better Call Saul. Maybe not The Americans, but they'll talk Better Call Saul.
Yeah, The Americans is still very much a niche show.
Yeah.
That's an inside baseball show. If people know that, I have pretty much good respect. I'm like, okay, you know your TV.
Right, exactly.
You get Randy's seal of approval.
Ba-donk.
Well, before we get into everything, let's do our check-ins with our house cleaning.
Yes.
Right. iTunes, that's a place where you guys can go and give us a 5-star rating, write a review. We'll read it here on the show. It's a great way to help us out. And we don't have any this week. We did have we had one last week.
Yeah, last week.
They've been trickling in here and there. We'd just like to once again remind our listeners, hey, that if you haven't done it yet, please do it.
Yeah.
It really helps out the show.
Indulge your reviewing muse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She is there. She's telling you to write glowing things about the TV dudes.
Right.
Do not deny her your fruits of labor.
That's a sexy way to put it.
That was really cool.
Yeah. Once again, go to iTunes, look up the TV dudes, write us a review, and give us 5 stars.
Yes.
Please.
Amuse your muse.
And patreon.com/TV dudes is where you guys can give us that cold hard cash you worked all week to make.
Of course.
give us all of it. Rent?
Don't give us all of it. Pay your rent. Pay your food.
Disappoint your landlord once again.
Right.
Be like, hey, landlord, I gave my money to the TV
house.
You understand. TV. He'd be like, oh, I love the TV.
We'll write you a note.
Right. Yeah. I'm foreclosing on this apartment complex anyway because I'm giving my money to TV dudes as well.
You know what? I'll tell you one thing. If Bernie Sanders, in all the taxing to pay for stuff, start paying for TV dudes, I'd vote for him in 2 seconds.
So we've discovered the way to get Greg on board.
So
Bernie, if you're listening.
So Bernie, I can become a Bernie bro if you are going to give us some of that tax money to support some arts, especially called TV dudes.
Hilarious, you saying Bernie bro.
I know, Bernie bro. I will literally be your Bernie
Don't be
brother.
A Bernie bro. Those guys are terrible.
Yeah, but bro in a brah. I'll be Bernie Bra.
Bernie Bra.
Bernie Bra.
All right. Well, we had one person actually up their donation, so I wanted to say thank you to Ali Render Porter.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate
it. And we hope you guys enjoy our special TV Dads Patreon podcast this week.
That's right. We didn't do our usual political dudes.
No.
Because it was a kind of a quiet political week.
Yeah, it's very quiet.
So we talked about dad life.
Yeah, dad life.
And we
hashtag that dad life.
We got into it, and parts are kind of gross.
It's talking about kids.
It's
kids
life.
Kids are gross.
It's life.
So if that turns you off, hey, don't even listen.
Exactly.
But, no, listen, we want to hear what you thought.
Yeah, we'll be back next week with probably more political talk. Moving on, we have listener questions. If you like us on Facebook, if you like us on Twitter, those are great places where you guys can actually ask us questions and we will read them here on the show.
Exactly.
Have you guys liked us on Facebook and Twitter, Randy?
Yes. Greg? Yes, I have.
I have. Of course I have.
You better have. All right. Our first question comes to us from Zach McLernan, who says, the CW, as we can agree, is going through a content renaissance.
Yep.
That's a beautiful way to put it. With arguably the largest range of consistently good material on network television, there seems to be two schools of thought as to when this started. One states that it started with Nikita, and the other started with Arrow. Do you subscribe to either of these, or do you believe that CW's current fortunes had a different starting point?
Arrow.
Well, see, funny for me, it would be Nikita, because that's the last time I watched CW, because I actually liked that show.
Nikita was a good show, but Nikita, I think I would compare it to sort of USA when it was doing its great stuff.
Yeah.
CW, with Arrow, CW found its brand.
Right.
And that's sort of, what's interesting is that its brand is not just the DC shows, but it also found its brand of, it wanted to reach that young, that like teenage female market was like what it was aiming for. And it had Supernatural. What was Supernatural?
Cause I think Supernatural
is actually the starting point. Yeah, Supernatural is before Arrow.
It was like mid-2000s?
Yeah. Because Supernatural like established a sort of geek hub.
Yeah.
A geek and genre hub.
And yeah, that's what it is.
Closely following that came Vampire Diaries.
Yep.
Which also kind of solidified them in that realm.
And that was around the time of the movies, right?
And they also had, not Pretty Little Liars, because that's a current one, but the one that had Veronica Mars, not Veronica, it wasn't Christa Bell doing the narration. It was like the Secret Diary or something. Like, there was like,
oh, the girls of the murder?
Gossip Girl.
Yeah, Gossip Girl.
Oh, Gossip Girl.
Gossip Girl. That was kind that was a CW, right?
Yeah, yes. That was before Supernatural, wasn't it?
I don't know. Gossip Girl was definitely one of the early ones, because it established the other fork of that that has brought us like Jane the Virgin and the one that I just mentioned that I blanked on again.
Right.
The ones that are sort of like soap opera-esque a little bit. I think that they hit that. That's another fork, because the 100 is very much in that Arrow and genre stuff. Mm-hmm. But there's stuff that's not genre, but that is sort of soapy.
So Supernatural is 2005. Gossip Girl is 2007.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Supernatural is probably where we would pin the beginning of the CW renaissance.
Yeah. So we're in that third school of thought, I guess.
Yes.
Next question comes from Jorge G. Chevrez.
Yes.
Takuyo? I hope I'm not butchering
that. I don't know.
Right, but that's okay.
I'm going to say Jorge Takuyo, who says, last week, the video game Quantum Break was released starring Sean Ashmore, a.k.a. Iceman.
Right.
Yep.
And Dominic Monaghan, a.k.a. Mary.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Aidan Gillen, a.k.a. Littlefinger.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The game includes a live-action series that is apparently affected by the progress you have on the game.
Hmm.
That's very intriguing.
That's interesting.
My question is, will the DV dudes check this out at some point?
So all I can say is that I'm a PS4 guy, but the Quantum Break ads have been the first thing that made me want to buy an Xbox One.
Mm. Yeah,
they're good ads.
They have a
Nirvana cover that's a really good cover, a Nirvana song.
Yeah.
It's really catchy, and I did not know about that, but I probably won't cover it in any kind of timely manner, because I don't have easy access to an Xbox One or time to play another game. But I can definitely see myself going to it at some point, because it's really intriguing.
Me too, because I'm like, wait a second, what is this? I see these characters that I know, and they're playing something totally different on the video game. And plus, again, you know, kind of touching upon the TV Dad stuff, I figure I'm going to have to get into some video game eventually, because I'm sure Ellington's going to be into it. So maybe I should start now, because I don't own any gaming systems at all. So, but that it looks like a good one to first.
What about you, Grant? You're a PS4 guy too, right? PS3.
I'm a PS3 guy.
Yeah.
And I've allowed video games to kind of fall by the wayside as far as just all the different media I try to consume. I used to be up to on it when I was a little bit more heartily participating on Rage Select. Would recommend, hey, check out RageSelect.com.
I bet they've covered Quantum Break.
I would imagine. And they would have some interesting thoughts. Jeff is super insightful on all that stuff.
I would love to check out Quantum Break, but unless someone wants to send me an Xbox One with Quantum Break, and an extra day of the week.
Are you asking our listeners?
I would like an Xbox One with Quantum Break, and if you could also add an extra day to the week that I have time to play it.
Gotcha. If I can ask for stuff, if anyone is a babysitter.
I want to say that's both more likely and probably not something you want to ask for on the internet. That is just not, that's a cautionary tale.
If anybody wants to chip into daycare, it'd be great.
Next question comes from Sean Martin now, who says, do you believe superhero shows should focus more on the ensembles, aka Legends of Tomorrow or Defenders, the heroes themselves, Jessica Jones or Daredevil, season one, or a hybrid of the two, such as like Flash and Arrow and their central heroes or and the teams? I know Arrow gets a lot of flack for ignoring Oliver Queen for characters like Felicity.
I am, and the funny because of the shows he listed, first of all, the ensemble is a thing I love in TV, but I feel like most of the TV shows that are ensemble and superhero are weaker. Legends of Tomorrow is a weaker show. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a weaker show. I like the hybrid. I like, because it's solo shows, like Agent Carter is arguably an ensemble, but it's really about like two or three characters.
See, I think ensemble can be done well. It's just that A, they don't do it well, and B, if they were to do it well, they can't afford the budget, or they have to sacrifice some storylines for others. When I think of the Marvel movies, for example, I actually love the ensemble ones. I love the Avengers 1 and 2. I enjoyed Age of Ultron. I'm that guy.
I did too. I'm also that guy.
At the same time, I look over at DC and I'm like, give me a solo Batman movie over
and they're gonna
characters. With Ben Affleck?
Yeah.
Cool. I'm on board for that.
I think that in TV, I think the hybrid method really works. Like, central character, but he's got a strong team around him. Like, I think Arrow and Flash have found that sort of formula that really works. I'm a big Green Arrow fan, but I have no problem with them giving episodes over to Felicity or to Diggle or to other side characters, because those are all well-developed characters.
I thought season two of Daredevil actually handled it pretty well in keeping it mainly, you know, Matt Murdock's story and balancing the different aspects of his alter ego and his, you know, main persona, but also rounding out a story with, you know, what's her name?
Karen
doing the investigation
and
stuff.
And Foggy.
Punisher. And Foggy. So.
Yeah, I'm a fan of strong central character and like two or three, or, you know, maybe a little more, really good supporting characters. I love Team Flash. And I think one of the smartest things Arrow did early on was that Oliver Queen had never really had much of a family, but giving him a mom and a sister really changed the dynamic for the better in that character. And I'm a big fan of the comic book version, but I think that was an addition that was really welcome.
All right, next question comes from Ali Render Porter. Hey, she was also our patron.
Yes, indeed.
True crime shows and podcasts are such a trend right now since Serial. Are you guys fans of the genre? And do you think that we should be expecting more shows like The Jinx, Making a Murder, and People versus O.J.?
You didn't put this in the news, so we should talk about this here.
Yes.
Greg called it.
I called this.
CBS is doing the JonBenet Ramsey true crime show, which I'm horrified by. I don't think that's a show you should do.
It makes me so
uncomfortable. For those who don't remember this, it was like, ironically, I think it was like 97, 98. Ironically, my sister moved out to Boulder, Colorado, like the year after or something like that. And it was still basically just a girl,
five-year-old beauty queen
that was found dead in her basement.
And there was implications that her parents were involved,
Nobody was ever charged, or there was a brother. Both parents have since died.
They both died?
Yeah, I think the mom had cancer, and I think the dad had something too. I'm pretty sure both of them. I know the mom is dead.
Well, that explains why they could go ahead and do the show.
Yeah. but there was a brother. I don't know what happened to that person. But yeah, it's a really weird, ugly thing that happened that just went on and on and on to the point where even now, and this is kind of a sick joke, if you watch Broad City, Did you see the one with?
I haven't seen the most recent few. Well, last one we saw was Clinton one.
Well, one was they end up finding a JonBenet Ramsey beanie baby or something, and they go off, and you know, this is before the news of the show, and really made me think about that about that case. It was terribly tacky and funny, but then I like realize, oh wait, this is like a child that nobody's figured out or nobody wants to say what happened to it. So
that one I'm not a fan of. But in general,
but
I mean, I didn't watch The Jinx. Did you guys both watch The Jinx?
Yeah.
And The Jinx, I heard, was really good.
Yeah, it was pretty
Making a Murderer was really interesting.
I didn't finish that one, but...
But I actually think that... while both of those are good, both either good or reportedly or good, I watched.
Yeah.
People vs. O.J. Simpson opens up a door that I think I had not been... I was surprised to go through, which was... It was true crime, but it was so entertaining and so gripping. Like, it was so fun.
I love the idea of taking... these real people that we followed in the news and recasting them and replaying
fictionalizing,
out
all, fictionalizing
all the aspects.
Yeah.
It's kind of exciting.
Yeah. I like that better than the documentary approach. Like the fictionalizing of it. And I think more of that I am totally open to. I'm looking forward to season two of American Crime Story.
Yes.
It's going to be Katrina.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see what this will spur. I mean, as Ali notes, the serial sort of spurned an interest.
Yes.
And I think that People vs. O.J. Simpson's success is going to spur an interest in true crime.
Well, it's interesting, too, with... And actually, what really makes me feel good about this is that with all the internet stuff that's on and all the instant news, instant that...
Right.
You can still do these deep dives.
Yeah.
Like, because remember, like, if you read these awesome magazine articles that went on for, 10,000 words describing, like, the ultimate tomb of that is In Cold Blood, which is, like, well, I think the first major one, which is, that book is still great to read. The original movie, the one in black and white, I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
And even the one, the Capote, when he was writing it, with Philip Seymour Hoffman in it, was fascinating.
First two seasons of Fargo were also fantastic. Those are based on real events, right?
Yeah, that's what it says in the teaser, so it has to be true.
Yeah, but they changed the name to protect the dead and innocent whatever the tagline is.
It's got to be real.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's good. I think in an interesting way, it's almost guaranteed ratings.
It's a good trend. I like this trend, and I've always been a fan of crime shows.
Yes.
So there's a worrisome with true crime where it could be a little too close, like too real.
Mm-hmm.
Like the JonBenet Ramsey, I don't think I'm gonna be able to watch that show. I think that's gonna be too real for me.
I'll probably end up.
But more things like People vs. OJ, which, despite the fact that there's a lot of tragedy in it and it's real and it does hit you that way, it was also soapy fun in the same way. It was interesting.
And it's really, it just kind of brings you back to a time in an interesting way of like a more simpler time, if you can say that, because people who did not like. Randy and I grew up that was 95. I was 24 years old.
Yeah.
So most of a significant part of our adulthood was still pre-internet.
Yeah.
And you have very vivid memories of how the culture really was. And even with the JonBenet Ramsey thing, if you think about, well, what Twitter would, how would happen with Twitter.
Right.
There's still an innocence to that I think can be explored, but I don't know.
Twitter reminds me of a thing that we haven't seen yet that I would love to see. I would love to see someone expand on the true crime into sort of real politic. I would love to see someone talk about the revolution in Iran or Tiananmen Square. I would love to see a miniseries set on stories like worldwide events that happened that were so affected that everybody knows about them, but sort of deep dive into that. I would love to see that approach.
That
9/11, loose change, inside joke.
Let's not see that. You can find those on YouTube.
That is that's still probably, and it's also too.
Alex Jones is gonna make it.
Alex Jones probably already did.
Right. And ironically, it's still
he made it with puppets.
It'll still be it's kind of still close. I mean, you need to do something like. I mean, almost like a Fargo thing, what they did with the Iran hostage thing.
Yeah.
From what, 79?
Yeah.
So, or like Munich.
Actually, Yeah, I Ran Hostage, I would love to see that explored a little bit too, because that was when I was a kid,
right?
And I didn't really fully know it was, but there's a whole lot of story. Well, and they need to do what they did with OJ,
right?
Which is go to the books, go to the guys who've done research, interesting books, and then flesh it out a little
bit. And do the book, do it as a TV show, because you can do 10 episodes of it as opposed to a book. Like, I might be the only person here who really enjoyed Munich.
I wasn't crazy about Munich. I wanted Munich to like it more than I liked it.
Because that whole thing really fascinated me, what happened in 72 in the Olympics. But, I don't know, but if maybe somebody could redo that, and then you could also do that as a 10 series show, and do it from both sides, from the Olympians and from the terrorists, the Palestinians that come up and do all the terrible things.
But what I really want to say before we get off this, I'd really love to see a 10 episode miniseries about the life of a guy who like buys a comic book store, and then he gets cancer. But he gets better, and maybe you could pay that guy a lot of money for his story.
Are you talking about the guy from Meltdown Comics?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, that guy, he's inspirational.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
But if that one guy could actually come up with like a comic, like a Blue Meth comic, I think it would work. But to pay for the cancer treatments,
yes,
and then have them mysteriously go away, and then but still.
And you know what I'd call that show?
What?
Breaking Bagged and Boarded.
Ah, come on. That was awesome. That was great.
All right. Well, we're going to have to cut our questions a little bit short. I'm going to run through. Let's do two more.
Okay.
This one comes from Justin Zarian. He says, do you feel that there are any shows on right now not getting the attention that they should that will really surge within the next few years?
That's
a good question. I almost feel like Billions is one of those shows.
Yes.
You've got two heavyweights.
Yeah.
Like Damian Lewis is a huge TV heavyweight, and Giamatti coming to TV was pretty huge, and I think it's flown under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one might get noticed, as long as they don't drop the ball in the second season like Showtime always does.
Well, I do think that, let me see, Ray Donovan and Homeland. Homeland had a better first season because it was just you didn't know what was going to happen with Brody. But Billions had a really good season. I mean, the episode before the penultimate, I can never say that word. But that episode was great with just the psychological thing. It was just basically characters talking. I think Billions will be that show, and maybe
I'm trying to think of other shows that are like, it's kind of hard to fly under the radar anymore. Like, people know about your shows.
I'm also curious because it's like, our radar is kind of set a little differently.
Yeah, that's true.
We're trying to absorb everything.
Yeah, what are people not seeing?
Yeah, I'm not sure if the things we watch are fully yet.
But I'm not sure either. Like, I know people that weren't watching Togetherness, and but are people watching Better Call Saul? The ratings are good, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. But maybe I was thinking like more like something like Master of None. Well, I think people watched it, but
yeah,
I think this,
I don't think that one's going to build up.
Yeah. I don't know.
But, I mentioned this last week, this show that I ended up catching up on that I heard about from a friend called The Detectress, which is a British show, BBC show with Mackenzie Crook and Toby Jones in it. And they are metal detector people in this little small British town.
Right.
And it's a small, quaint little story,
right?
But it's pretty charming.
Actually, I do have one.
I was just going to say that while the show itself, I don't see it necessarily blossoming. And the second season, they already had a second season, which just came out.
Mm-hmm.
But since it's been picked up on Netflix, I can totally see this getting an American spinoff.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the American spinoff might actually amp up some more of what Americans gravitate more toward in their comedies. And it could actually do pretty well for
them. Okay. What do you got, Greg?
American Crime on ABC. Because this second season was awesome.
That's what I hear. I need to catch up on it.
I mean, the first season was good. It had its holes in it. But the second season was just amazing.
You know what I think really brought the second season together?
What it did.
There was a scene in a comic book store. It was very small. But I feel like it was sort of the key scene that sort of brought everything together.
Don't you think that's kind of like a prequel of that show we were talking about earlier?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's, people are going to go back and like, oh, I didn't even realize, it'll be the trivia question
when
people are talking about the Breaking Bagged and Boarded.
Right.
They're going to be talking about that. They're going to be like, wow, that show, which won all the Emmys, even though the guy was based on Hey, the Emmys,
right,
and all the Golden Globes. And they even invented a new award show to give awards to that show. It was so loved and made so much money for the network that bought it,
right,
for such a really low price that they paid that comic book guy. I mean, he only took a few million away from that.
Yeah.
He wasn't greedy about it or anything.
Absurd.
By the way, the actress, did you get a chance to talk to the actress who was behind the counter? I was just curious. Like,
No, it was so busy. I didn't get a chance to talk to anybody except a couple of the scout guys.
Right.
I wanted to talk to John Ridley, but I didn't get much of a chance. He was only there for a short time. I didn't get to talk to the director. I didn't want to bug him. But before we go off this topic, one thing I want to mention is I was watching Billions.
Yeah.
Do you guys realize House of Lies is up in season 5?
Yes.
So
that
there,
one's not good.
There are shows under the radar.
No,
under our radar.
Even like Penny Dreadful season three. And then I just saw this other show that's like on season 2. I was like, the Netflix show Bloodline season 2. I didn't even finish season one.
Another show I keep hearing about is Jane the Virgin, which you mentioned earlier, which seems to do really well, as well as My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Right.
Yeah, both those CW shows are, I need to watch both of those.
It sounds like those are some shows that I should be checking.
What I've seen of Jane the Virgin, I really like. Also, just to throw this out to Allie, I know I need to watch Gilmore Girls. I know with the reunion coming, I need, and seeing how many people are in it, like Melissa McCarthy was in it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's all these people that were in
it. Get on it.
I need to get on Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, you do it. You take the hit.
Yeah,
for
you do that for us, please.
All right, last question, guys. This one comes from Martin Linvid, who says, create a bizarre buddy cop team up using using two characters from different shows.
Wait.
Choosing an angry captain gives extra points.
Okay,
just go, Randy. Wait.
Yeah, you know where I'm going to go. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to take Tatiana Maslany from Orphan Black.
Right.
All right.
She's going to be playing Allison because I think that's the most fun one.
All
right. Allison moves over from being a housewife to become a detective.
Mm-hmm.
They're working in narcotics because there's drugs in her kid's schools and she won't have it.
Right.
And I'm going to pair her with Rust Cole from True Detective.
Oh my God.
Who is totally down with kids doing drugs because, you know, it's all about expanding the mind, man.
Right.
And for my angry captain, let's see. Who am I going to go for my angry captain? I almost want to go with Captain Holt from Brooklyn Nine-Nine just to see where that goes, but that's too easy.
Yeah.
That's too easy. So instead, I'm going to bring in the Punisher from Daredevil.
Oh my God.
As the angry captain who's like, just get it done. Here's some guns. Go kill everyone.
I don't think he'd have a staff left. I think he'd kill his staff and then go out and do it himself.
Murder everyone.
That's good. I like that one.
What do you got, Greg?
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Such pressure here.
Pressure. Okay. Lenny Briscoe, because I love Lenny Briscoe. Lenny Briscoe from Law & Order with...
Isn't he already a detective?
Yeah, I don't care.
I don't care.
I like it.
I'm just going to pick two people from Law & Order.
Yeah,
I'm done.
No. I would say Lenny Briscoe and let's see, another detective. You see, I'm trying to avoid the... Actually, no. I'll go with Stringer Bell. Why not Stringer Bell? It was not a detective. I'm trying to avoid the... All I do is watch detective shows. I have to try to blow my mind.
Outside
and try to
your comfort zone there, Greg.
Yeah, so I got to pick... I got to actually pick two different... Let me go with two different TV shows. And how about like... oh my God, who's the lead actor in Transparent? And he's got to play Mora as a detective.
Okay, sure.
Mora as a detective, Jeffrey Tambor.
Yep.
As Mora as a detective, with JB Smooth from
yeah, that's good.
And the angry captain would have to be like Larry David as
oh my God, Larry David as angry captain is fantastic.
Yeah. So or Susie Essman.
That is brilliant.
Yeah,
yes.
I'd rather have her as an angry actor. Just cursing at them all the time.
Oh my gosh, she'd be so angry.
Yes.
All right, well, I don't
you got
think
nothing?
I have to answer that.
Really? All right, I got another one for you then, Greg. I got you covered.
Sure.
All right, so we're going to take TJ Miller's character from Silicon Valley.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we are going to pair him with, let's see, I'm going to pair him with Ilana from Broad City.
Oh, yes.
And they're working homicide.
Mm-hmm.
And their angry captain is Charlie from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh my gosh.
Fuck, dude.
That's crazy.
In a heartbeat, I would watch that. In a heartbeat. Yeah.
Yes.
That's so good.
That is good.
All right, so we got some news, and Grant is very excited about the Marvel's Defenders.
Mm. I just kind of loaded up on this.
Yeah, because there is so much news about the Defenders this week, so I'm just going to knock it out. Mm-hmm. So Iron Fist has added Lord of the Rings alum David Wenham as Harold Meacham. Now, I'm trying to remember. Lord of the Rings had 100 billion characters, most
he
of which are hobbits.
He looks like Boromir's brother.
Okay, yeah. Faramir.
Faramir.
See, I know his name. I don't know what he looks like.
Yeah.
Anyway, Harold Meacham is Danny Rand's dad's business partner, who is somewhat corrupt, as I recall. And so he's going to be kind of the bad guy.
Okay.
So that'll be interesting.
This guy looks like he could be a bad guy. Mm-hmm.
So that's cool that they're bringing him in.
I read that the Finn, what's that guy's name? Finn Jones?
Yeah, yeah. He's doing martial arts training.
Like extreme stuff. Good, which I'm like, good, dude. You better. Yeah. Better earn it.
So it wasn't Finn Jones. Was it Charlie Wilson? Not Charlie Wilson.
Charlie Day.
Yeah, back to that. Yeah. Who plays Daredevil?
Charlie Cox.
Charlie Cox. I believe it's him who mentioned that the Daredevil Defenders is shooting late this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that means maybe right after Iron Fist, we're going to get the Defenders. Right.
Has Iron Fist even started?
Iron Fist, they're just now finishing casting.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you think it's possible? Defenders will have to come after Iron Fist.
Right. I mean, are they going to all of a sudden just go bam, bam, bam on like all these
There's
series?
No way they give us more than two a year. There's
because
no way.
Luke Cage is later this year, September.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. September.
Meanwhile, they're going to start shooting Iron Fist before they do the Defenders.
Yeah. So probably what we're going to get is Luke Cage, Daredevil Season 2, which we already got.
Right.
Luke Cage Season 1. Iron Fist season one, right when Daredevil season two dropped, so you know early next year, and then Defenders
and
season
then
one,
Jones.
Yeah,
and then Jessica Jones probably after Defenders.
Okay,
my guess is that as Defenders will make as much of a change to the Marvel Netflix universe as Avengers did to the Marvel Cinematic.
They did say that Jessica Jones is having a season two, right?
They did.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if they've 100% confirmed
Cage
it.
And Iron Fist need a second season. It'd be cool if they just had a team up one.
Yes, they need a Power Man and Iron Fist season one. That's what I want.
That'd be rad.
And then give Punisher a series.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, and finally in this news, we had to mention this because it came up on Greg's Google alert that says searches for anything that mentions The Wire.
Yeah.
So Luke Cage, head executive producer, showrunner, who also wrote the first two episodes, Cheo Hadari Coker, I don't know this name, but he's running it.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing press at the red carpet premiere for Civil War, and he says this. He says, it's very sophisticated. I mean, it's got a 90s hip-hop vibe, but it's really forward-thinking. We have composer, music producer Adrian Young.
Yes.
And Ali Shaheed Muhammad of A Tribe Called Quest doing the scoring for us. We have a lot of different musical experiences, but at the same time, we've got the Marvel action. We've got drama. I would like this to be, I mean, I know this is heavy, but The Wire of Marvel Television, because
Come
we really
on.
Deal with a lot of different issues. Here's the important bit of that sentence.
Right.
We would like this to be
right.
The Wire of Marvel Television. You know what? That's true of everyone. Everyone would like to be The Wire of everything.
Right.
It's just such a tired cliche for every show to always be like, oh, we think we're going to be The Wire.
It's a shortcut for we want to be great TV.
Or it's a shortcut for we've got black crime people that aren't just criminals in it. That's basically what it sounds like.
Yeah, you may be right, actually.
Well, because I looked at the article and they named all the black actors, which is great. I mean, I'm very happy with all the black actors they've got to start. Dominic West was pretty damn good too.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm shilling for the white dude, but I'm just saying. whatever.
When's the white guy going to get his fair shake in America,
man.
Greg?
The white guy has just been beaten down all the time. They're blamed for everything. But,
this guy.
Go ahead.
Oh, Cheo Hadari Coker actually has a pretty impressive, albeit short resume for his producing credits, but he was started with Southland and then did NCIS Los Angeles, then Almost Human, then Ray Donovan.
He did Almost Human?
And well,
oh, he's one of the guys on it.
Or yeah, he was a co-executive producer.
Oh yeah, I'm assuming it was good.
And but now then he's
Ray Donovan, which is your jam.
The executive producer for Luke Cage.
I like Ray Donovan.
This sounds good. I'm excited. Marvel hasn't dropped the ball on their Netflix TV yet.
No.
Even though I was not as big on Daredevil season 2 as season 1, it's still pretty great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we just saw the Doctor Strange trailer, and that looks great too. So, Marvel, I trust Marvel. Something I trust a little less is our last bit of news, which is a super rumor. It comes from Birth Movies Death, may not be true. Mm-hmm. And it's also, it comes from a universe that I'm not sure I'm ready to believe in yet, even though they got a lot of talent lined up, and that is Star Trek. Mm-hmm. So the rumor claims that the new Star Trek series, the one that's going to be on the CBS streaming, is going to be set between the Undiscovered Country, which was sort of the end of the previous Star Trek,
right,
and Next Generation, leaving a roughly 70-year chunk of the series timeline. Now, that's a section of time we really haven't seen, because they did Generations, did the movie where like Kirk's people sort of crossed over into the Next Generation.
Right.
But that was really like as close as it got. We haven't seen the bridge between when the Klingon, you know, how the Klingons peace with the Federation and how that all shook out.
Right.
And the Romulans going away and coming back and a lot of stuff that happened in Star Trek. That's a good chunk of time to explore.
Is Worf a Klingon?
Worf is a Klingon.
Okay. Then I know what the Klingons are.
Yes.
Why do you not like this?
Oh, no, I like this a lot. I just don't know how true it is.
I thought you were saying that you didn't like the idea of
No, I love the idea. But you don't trust the idea. It's true. I don't trust that it's true. And I'm not sure I trust Star Trek because they haven't done a lot of stuff I like.
But Brian Fuller.
It's Brian Fuller.
Mm-hmm. So isn't that, I mean,
yeah.
It's also Alex Kurtzman.
Yeah.
It's Brian Fuller.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah. He can give you pause.
And I'm not a big fan of the Star Trek movies, the most recent one. So,
yeah.
But if this is true, it's probably not related to the new Star Trek continuity.
Yeah.
It's more TV, which I think would be a good thing too. But we'll see. I don't know how much I believe this rumor, but I'd like to believe.
So I wanted to bring it back for one last little, not story, but fun casting.
You want to talk about the Defenders again, Grant?
Fun fan casting. Yes. I came across this thread that was discussing if Daredevil casts a moderately known actor for Bullseye, like they did with John Bernthal for Punisher, who would you like to see play the character?
Oh, man, somebody came up with the perfect guy, and I blanked on who it was.
Because there's a bunch of suggestions.
Let's hear it and see if the suggestion was the one I heard.
Mm-hmm. First one, Walton Goggins.
Walton Goggins would be amazing as Bullseye. Yeah.
Just his smile, his teeth are so menacing all the time. And then someone else was like, why not Timothy Oliphant? But I think he's too
he's
tall
a little,
and
he's too old, too.
He's too old, and he's a little... from what I know of Bullseye, wouldn't he be a little too good-looking, I guess?
You know, Bullseye could be good-looking. There's no need for him to be a Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell. He's super dreamy.
Right. But I mean, not saying that Walton Goggins is not a good-looking man.
You know, and this comes from Better Call Saul, but...
Man, I can't imagine
Michael Mondo could play that role.
Ooh.
Who's Michael Mondo?
He's Nacho in Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah.
Better Call Saul, rather. Yeah, he could pull that role off.
Yeah, he's pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
And bald.
Yeah. And he could do that menace.
Speaking of Breaking Bad, Aaron Paul, someone suggested.
Aaron Paul would be great.
Mm-hmm. Jason Statham, which I think...
Jason Statham is an obvious one, but he's a little old for it. He can do action really well.
He's corny, though.
You don't like Jason Statham?
You know what?
I just find him... I don't think he's a great actor.
Bullseye needs to do a lot of the same thing that the Joker does, though. It's got to be a mix of sort of menace and funny. And I think that Statham can pull that off.
Yeah, I think he can. I mean...
I don't think he'd do TV.
I think he could if he...
I just don't want to hear him try and be Bullseye.
No, but if he...
Is he supposed to be British? Bullseye?
He's British. No. Yeah. No, Bullseye is American.
But if Statham goes back to the Lock, Stock, Two Broken Barrels and Snatch, Statham, who was very understated and really funny, he's got comedic timing.
Yeah, you think of him as the action guy, but Lock, Stock and
he was great in
Snatch,
those movies.
He was great in both those. I like Aaron Paul, but I wouldn't want to play Bullseye because I want Aaron Paul to be a star somewhere. I think he could be a Marvel character. Mm. I don't know which one, but I know there's a Marvel character out there for him.
I thought it could have been... Iron Fist. I would love
to
be
totally
Iron Fist.
Have an Iron Fist.
Here's another one that I thought was kind of interesting. Hugh Dancy.
Hugh Dancy could play Bullseye. Although I think I'd want Hugh Dancy. Bullseye is a bit of a mook. Mm-hmm. He's smart, but he's got that cunning smart. He's not like a crime boss.
What do you think of this? Sean William Scott.
No.
Wow.
No.
No. William Scott can't act.
When was the last time he's done anything?
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I'm like, I don't know.
No, Hugh Dancy, I want to play someone more menacing. I'm trying to think, like...
Do you like Kim Coates?
Kim Coates. I don't know who that
Kim
is.
Kim Coates.
He's a bad guy in a lot of things.
Kim Coates.
And he was in Sons of Anarchy recently.
I don't know him, I guess.
Kim Coates.
You'd have to pull up
a know, he's how about this?
Guy.
Go draw from Breaking Bad. Jesse Plemons is Bullseye.
You know he can do it.
He can pull it off.
That guy's a fucking
That
chameleon.
Guy can do Psycho.
Yeah. He's got to drop a bunch
Kim
of weight
Coates.
Again.
I see that. Yeah. Kim Coates. I see. Yeah, he's a that right. guy. You recognize him.
But do we assume we're getting Bullseye in season three? Because I assume we're getting Bullseye in
we
season
gotta
three.
We got to be getting Bullseye. Yeah.
I assume we're going to get the Kingpin Bullseye Electra, the Frank Miller classic stuff in that season.
Walton Goggins would be great.
Walton Goggins would be great.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That smile is so beautiful.
Yeah.
Stick shifts and safety belts, bucket seats have all got to go when we're driving in the car. It makes my baby seem so far. I need you here with me, not way over in a bucket seat. I need you to be here with me, not way over in a bucket seat. But when we're driving in my Malibu, it's easy to get right next to you. I say, baby, scoot over, please. And then she's right there next to me. I need you here with me, not way over in a bucket seat. I need you to be here with me, not way over in a bucket seat.
All right, Randy, what were you just saying off mic?
Oh, we're going to start with this? Okay.
Yeah, we're going to start with this.
So I've been listening to The Watch, which is Channel 33's TV podcast with Chris Ryan and Andy Greenwald, who are my second favorite podcasting duo.
They're some of the biggest TV critics out there.
They are.
Right?
They're really big. Mm-hmm. And they're about to do the Game of Thrones after show on HBO. Right. These are big guys.
Right.
So they've got to have good taste,
right? They don't like Better Call Saul so much.
Okay. Now you're going
to... Say that again.
They don't like Better Call Saul so much. They don't like season two.
What they were talking about is
they were saying that they're like, they love the cast and they love that it's like well produced, but they were saying like, it's about a guy becoming a lawyer. And they're saying like a guy being a lawyer is not as interesting as a guy starting to cook meth. They were saying that the subject matter was not that interesting to them. And I'm like, I have never felt in watching this show like that there is any point at which I'm like not completely engaged in what's going on.
Okay, I will say this, and this is every once in a while, I really wish I was more active with emailing with people sometimes.
Yeah.
The thing that actually drives me nuts about Bill Simmons and Channel 33 is that there's a pulpiness to it that drives me nuts. I don't give a shit about wrestling. I don't give a shit about some of the stuff like The Bachelor. I could care less. And there's
fucking basketball.
No, the sports stuff is good on sports for me.
Sorry.
No, but like some of the pop culture references are just pulpy that they need some kind of like either pulpiness or cheesiness or something, and sometimes the real serious stuff or the stuff that takes maybe, you know, they don't give enough time to like let the story develop. Yeah. Like everybody loves The Wire, everybody loves Breaking Bad, The Shield, all that stuff, but some of the little ones, they like, I don't feel like watching it. And to me, it's almost like an intellectual just laziness because they don't want to put the time into it. Because I'm like, how can you not like that show?
Sometimes I feel like with Andy Greenwald in particular, that he seems to like resting on his prestige a little bit too much, and he likes to dangle and tease his affection for things to get people like, like, oh, you haven't earned my respect yet.
You know what's interesting, though?
Yeah.
They both love The Bridge. They both love The Bridge.
The Bridge is fucking great.
But The Bridge is as slow as you get. I mean, they're talking about boring subject. I guess The Bridge is about like drug trade and all
the
that
original
and politics. Both seasons.
Both seasons were great. They were both great.
Jordan or whatever it was.
Well, you know, actually, what I don't know their opinion on, but you know, you should judge them on the opinion on Terriers. That's what you should.
Do they not like Terriers?
I don't know. I haven't heard them talk about it. That's what you need to judge their opinion
on. That's funny because Andy Greenwald did not like the first season of Leftovers at all.
Yeah, he really hated it.
He hated it. But he came back, though.
He did come around. He came around a little bit.
Yeah, he hated it. Yeah,
but it was begrudging. It was begrudging. He didn't want to.
And he still feel like, fuck you, dude. How'd you not like that?
See, I love Andy Greenwald a lot of the time, but every so often I write a piece where I'm like, how can we be so simpatico on this and so different on this? And that's good. I don't want everybody to agree with me. As long as it doesn't get my shows canceled.
Right.
And they're welcome to dislike Better Call Saul because it's not going anywhere.
Right.
They're not welcome to dislike
I was shocked by it because I'm like, I thought one of them was going to be more like, usually when one of them says something like, oh, I wasn't feeling it, the other one comes back and it's like, oh, really? Yeah. I liked this one. They were both sort of on board. There's like this whole sort of notion that Better Call Saul is about a guy, a lawyer, and clerk tricks and little minutiae of law and that kind of stuff. And I'm like, that's not what the show's about. But it's about human foibles and relationships as much as Breaking Bad was. And it's got that little Susan of the crime trade and drug trade. It's over to the side.
Yeah. But, see, that's to me where I think people goes to my bias, but why Breaking Bad is number three for me is, or maybe even farther down the list, as opposed to my Mad Men and Wire, is that Breaking Bad.
I love your qualification. You always got to be like, Wire's up top, by the way.
But it's because of my worldview.
I know.
Which is, different than some people. So they like Breaking Bad, they like the explosiveness, the craziness. You can tell that's what they really geared to. Because Breaking Bad had a lot of really great scenes.
Yeah.
I mean, still one of the best scenes on TV ever is Face Off. That's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You know, all that kind of stuff. I think they really enjoy that. I don't think they enjoy or they think about enough of the character development.
Yeah.
Which is where, that, like I said, for...
It's where it separates itself from the pack.
Yeah. And I think, that's where I think, where I can understand why people think The Wire or Mad Men are boring, because if you're not into that human minutia and how, watching, two guys saying fuck and how that explains police procedurals or somebody or, Kima when she was trying to measure out and figure out who shot the kid and realized it was an accident. If you don't like that shit, it's boring and I can see why you wouldn't like it. But so that's the same thing with Saul. Like, I like Saul probably a little bit better than Breaking Bad because of that. I mean, all the little things, all the little looks that they give, or that opening shot last week about the drugs, or the opening shot this week was great, which you knew what was going to happen, but it's still like all little pieces, or even the precursor last week when they, with Mike doing a thing with the
gardeners.
Right. And the payoff we get.
The payoff is that. And then even when he's in the bar and he does that little, he pulls out the money to pay a drink. He's like, and he just, I'm going to buy the house around. And then he buys the house around. And then that look at his face, that's like the most emoting you'll get from him. Is he kind of does that half-ass smile it feels good. That kind of shit I like.
Here's the weird thing.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure both these guys are big fans of Mad Men. And how do you love Mad Men and not think that how's the minutiae of a 50s advertising agency any less interesting or any more interesting than
sex?
Is it the sex?
The sex. Yeah.
There needs to be more sex.
Yeah. I mean, it's just,
Better Call Saul.
It was flashy and explosive.
Yeah.
But not obviously in a violent way, but in a sexual, emotional way.
I was just taken aback.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
that was surprising.
Yeah. It certainly rankles my jingle horns, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know that old saying.
No, I do not know that old saying, but it was
great. No, but all the kids are going to be saying
they're
that.
They're always saying it.
Hashtag rankle my jingle horns.
Rankle my jingle horns.
But while we're on the subject, let's talk about Better Call Saul this week.
Oh, okay. All right. We're going to talk about it.
Yeah. Man, this one had the biggest, most heartbreaking scene, which I think really reminded me of what Breaking Bad itself did so well.
Yeah.
And that's right at the end with Chuck.
The consequences of thoughtless actions.
Yeah.
The trying to weasel out of the things you've gotten yourself into and getting dug in even worse.
And understanding that all those consequences really have, all those actions really have severe consequences that you think you could kind of figure out, okay, well, he says this, he does this, this is how it could kind of come back on him. And I think that's where Vince Gilligan is fucking genius about that. Like he like
Gilligan thinks these things through.
Like, but like not the obvious one. He'll go with the subtle one. Like, I'll never forget. Like my, you know, that was a season, the last season when he where Todd shot that kid.
Yeah,
I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, you know? It just kind of comes out.
Yeah.
Now, did you guys feel like they really kind of pull us, the audience, in to not only rooting for Saul, but sort of feeling like we're along on his shenanigans?
No, ever since the shit about the dad, I'm like, he's a dick, but I don't care.
But do you believe the story about the dad? Because I don't believe that story. Yes. Especially after seeing that flashback to his dad being the sucker. I'm like, you know what? But I think that's Chuck's point of view. But, I don't think that's what happened.
No, but that's Jimmy's point of view of that. That's the way I looked at it. I looked at that. That's Jimmy's point of view of the way he thinks. Because Jimmy's always giving himself reasons for doing stuff.
But this is interesting, Greg. Yeah. Like, when you saw the scene right up until what happened with Chuck, were you not kind of like in a way rooting for
Jimmy to get away with it?
Because he's like, he's the prankster. He's pulling a fast one. It's kind of funny.
But see, that's the thing. Like, okay, I think,
and I thought it was like, oh wow, it's so funny that in a way I feel like I have wronged Chuck as well.
Yeah,
in putting him in this situation. Like,
yeah, I was in the same boat.
Job in like making me feel like I was also guilty.
I guess that the talk that he had with her, Chuck did, that Mike, Chuck's got a point of view. It might be, okay, it might be an exaggerated point of view of the way he looks at Jimmy. It's just as Jimmy's a point of view of like, this is really nothing. It's kind of an exaggerated way of like, no, Jimmy, actually, this is pretty bad stuff. I do think that we're looking at both these characters are looking at the actions in their point of view, and they're in either super terrible or it's not that big of a deal when it's a little blend of both. And so I always felt a little bit for Chuck because I think he's also his condition, just for whatever breakdown, which we haven't seen how he lost his ex, how he lost the wife and all that stuff. Something happened that he's really damaged. And I think, and Jimmy took advantage of him. All Chuck did was go in there the right way and won the business back the correct way. Now, I mean, he was goaded into it, but he didn't say anything about Jimmy. So all he did was basically go on to points. And Chuck knew on these points of that fact that I know this banking law shit more than she does, and the way he said it without disparaging her, I thought, that's fair. And it just worked. It's just that the opportunity came up.
I'm definitely a different point of view. Right. I've been in the fuck Chuck camp ever since season one ended, and I'm like,
got a better rhyme.
Yeah.
The fuck Chuck.
I've Better Call Saul and fuck Chuck.
Right.
I've been against this guy, and maybe it's sort of the being raised on so much snob versus slob shit, you know?
Yeah.
But his whole holier-than-thou bullshit has driven me crazy from the early outset, and I've always felt like, I don't want this guy to win. And I understand that he didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
But at the same time, all I could see was, you don't need this business. Your business will be fine without having Mesa Verde.
Right.
Kim went, busted her ass, got that business.
Right.
And then she's not going to, and it's like, it's make or break for her. It's whether or not she can afford to live to have that business for her. So for him to take it back is a real dick move.
But where's the loyalty or any sort of love and compassion for his brother?
Yeah.
Like starting out on his own business, like being like, hey, this is a business partner of sorts for
it's
you.
It's a jealousy. He's always been jealous and he's always
very undercutting.
He's always looking at his brother. And the thing about it is there's no way that Chuck should have figured out what Jimmy did, unless Chuck is the kind of person who never takes responsibility for his own mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't even enter his mind that he could have made that mistake. As sick as he is, as delusional as he is sure he didn't make the mistake. And you know why? Because he blames Jimmy for everything.
But there might be reasoning for it. But see, this goes back to my Breaking Bad prejudice of like, after like halfway through season one, I knew, Walter White's a fucking douchebag because there's no person in the planet would turn down the money for cancer for his fucking family. Nobody would do that.
But why does Chuck get such a break? Like, get that douchebag moment for you?
No, because Jimmy's a fucking douchebag. I just happen to think he's funny, but he's a douchebag. He's a total, scamming people for money, lying. Never even, he took that job that he knew he shouldn't have taken. He basically scammed the law firm that he he scammed them, and he knew he could have gotten it, but Jimmy's a very fucking selfish guy.
So this is fascinating to me,
because I find Chuck way more selfish than Jimmy.
No, I don't. Because
I find, like, Jimmy's a guy who's been strabbling his whole life, and he does the best he can.
But don't you remember that
Jimmy's a scam artist? Though
he's a scam artist.
But every time Jimmy tries to do the things the right way,
he doesn't.
Things bite him in the ass
because Jimmy's a scam artist, and Chuck, remember. But season one,
corners.
Yeah, Chuck season one is like talked about bailing him out all the time. So it's like, because he's his older brother. That's why Chuck did that thing. He's like, listen, I know, but I was really happy you're here. He did when he said that in the last episode.
Yeah,
you knew. Okay, this is really going to come back to bite Jimmy somehow, because even though they have their differences, there is a basic, like, you're my brother, and yeah, we
see. You read a sincerity in it that I don't read.
I read
Chuck as saying something that I did not believe for a second he would do the same thing in that position.
I think he would, because
yeah, I didn't either.
You've got a rose colored view of Chuck. I've got a rose colored view of Jimmy. No, I'm willing to forgive a lot of Jimmy's flaws. And not any of Chuck's, and you're the opposite with Jimmy.
Well, you know why?
I think they're both schmucks.
You know why? But I look at Chuck.
I just want to root for the bad guy.
Right. Yeah.
I know they're the bad guy. I want to root for him.
But I look at Chuck as an old school kind of provider type guy. Like a dad, like a dad who's like 75 years old.
Yeah.
Who really wants to. They do things, and they know it's their duty to take care of shit.
Unless that person pisses them off, in which case, fuck those person.
No, but they still will do it while making you feel like shit while they're doing it. Because that's what old school dads used to do. They will take care of you, but make you feel like an asshole about it.
Was he going to take care of Kim? No, he didn't give a shit about Kim.
And then he wants to pretend
like he cares about her when he's talking about Jimmy.
I just think he's just talking matter of fact. Like, Jimmy, you know, he's a dick, and he did this to my dad, and I'm just letting you know. He's not going to try to save her, though.
So clearly this show is trying to do a lot of what they did as well in Breaking
Bad. Which is great. That's why I love the show.
A Mr. Chips character and turn him into Scarface. Yeah. That's their famous phrase.
No, they didn't.
Phrase.
Jimmy's always been a dick.
I'm talking about Walter White.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Jimmy was never Mr. Fisher. Yeah.
But at the same time, they introduce Jimmy in a way that they still want him to be a little bit endearing. He's not the beast in a way that he becomes when we know him as Saul.
Saul is 100% okay with being a sleazy criminal lawyer.
When we meet Jimmy McGill, he's kind of a slick, charming, yet a little bit sleazy, but he's trying
to do the right thing. He wants to do what his brother wants him to do. He makes his best try at it. It's just that it's not his nature, and he keeps giving it up.
But that's because his brother fucking bailed his ass out. And whatever reason, we don't know where that happened, where maybe his brother said, listen.
His dad was a sucker. He didn't want to be a sucker. Yeah, he wanted to be a wolf.
Want to be a wolf, not a sheep. But here's my question.
Yeah.
Given where this whole episode goes, Jimmy's actions last episode, he's a smart guy.
Right.
Did he not think that Chuck was going to figure it out? Or was he so pissed that he wasn't thinking? Or does he know he was going to figure it out? In which case, why didn't he cover himself? Like, do you guys think that – did Jimmy know this was going to happen? And if so, why didn't he do anything about it?
I don't think Jimmy
– was he just acting heat of the moment?
But see, that's the thing. I think Jimmy doesn't think that's the whole point.
Jimmy doesn't think
all the way through. That's why when Kim's in bed with him, he's like – yeah, you know that Chuck, he's a great lawyer, and it's kind of go Jimmy.
Jimmy thinks on his feet, but not long term.
Jimmy's impulsive, always impulsive, and then like
very selfish.
He has to constantly cover his tracks for everything he does.
I mean, the contrast is very clear here. You look at, and I'm sure this was deliberate.
Right.
You see Jimmy out of the school,
shooting
illegally. And by the way, I'm sure there's easier ways to get a flag shot, but it was a funny scene.
Yeah, it was great, very funny scene.
And the teachers come out, and he's quickly able to like spew some bullshit and get back on
totally
his thing.
Wrong,
but
totally wrong stuff he was spewing.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter because he's so convincing. He's great at thinking on his feet, and then he flashed
and
to
doing
Chuck.
Cold reads. Yeah,
you look at Chuck when he's in his element, in a legal thing, and he gets flummoxed by this one bit where something has happened and a fairly minor thing. I mean, it's important, but it's a minor clerical thing.
Right.
And Jimmy could have talked his way out of that. Chuck can't even get them to give him the time of day, and it's over. And that, I think, is the contrast between the two brothers, is that Chuck is a thinker. Once he gets a little time on him and he thinks about what happened, he's able to put together exactly what happened, start looking at 24-hour copy shops, all that kind of stuff. Jimmy doesn't think about the long-term implications, right. But in the moment, he is on it. He's got a solution. He's got 10 solutions for any problem.
I thoroughly agree with that. So we should pivot to Mike, though.
Yeah.
The other side.
Mike does both.
Yeah,
but Mike can improvise and Mike plans.
Yeah, but Mike doesn't...
Is still in half measure mode.
What we got with both these characters is that, yeah, they didn't fully commit to their actions and other people paid as a consequence.
Yeah,
right.
So Chuck and then the innocent Good Samaritan.
They got shot.
Yeah.
And how that actually affects that. Mike.
Yeah.
And now he's going to go into kill mode. He's just going to kill everyone.
Well, I mean, you remember going back to Breaking Bad, and one of the things I love about Better Call Saul is that you don't have to have seen Breaking Bad to enjoy this show.
Yeah.
But if you have, there's another dimension to it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So Mike gives a very memorable speech to Walt about half measures.
Yes, right. Exactly.
He's like, don't take half measures. He's like that. And he tells the story about when he was a cop.
Yeah, exactly.
And he still has not fully learned that lesson. I mean, he says he learned that lesson when he was a cop.
Right.
But clearly he hasn't learned about not taking half measures.
In fact, he never learns that lesson.
Right. We're watching him learn to not take half measures.
No, he never does.
Ultimately, never
learns.
I guess that's true.
That was one of my least favorite scenes. That was the MacGyver scene of fucking Breaking Bad. Yeah. Like, really, Mike is going to do that? But anyway, a little piece of plastic is going to hold Walter White. I think he's still in like this weird mourning, still trying to deal mourning over his son and trying to take care of his granddaughter and also trying to mentally deal with his crazy wife.
He still wants to be a good guy.
He wants to be a good guy, but he has no options.
Yeah.
So he's got, he's almost like a fucked up emotional Liam Neeson. He's got these particular sets of skills that can kill people, but he doesn't want to do it.
Yeah.
But he's got to go full on. But even then, he still has this code that he has a code that he tries to live by, but the world he's in, those codes don't fucking work.
And Michael Mondo, Nacho, is like the devil on his shoulder. He's always the guy coming to him looking doing like, let's just kill him.
Yeah.
He's like, just kill him. It's the easy thing. You'd be done with it.
Right. And it's fucked up.
Yeah.
But he's not wrong.
But Mondo is very clever. He's the one who countered and figured it out. He's like, wait, this guy didn't kill the guy? Oh, it had to
be this
dude.
I know who it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's weird because... We know we don't see this character.
We know Nacho's not long. We know between Nacho and Mike, which one continues into Breaking Bad.
Right. I gotta say, when we saw Jimmy drive up to the copy shop, and we see this guy at the counter, and seeing Ernesto from the back, I thought it was Gus for a second. I was
did you?
Oh, really?
Are they doing like a little subtle thing, Gus, and he's gonna walk out because it was like. He has this poison. He's thin, and you just can't see the back of his head. Yeah, I was like, that'd be like an interesting little Easter egg. Yeah. But then he turned around.
Did love the scene with Ernest with the copy guy and Jimmy. Jimmy's whole bribery thing. Yeah. And the guy they had as a cop, this is one of the other things that Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad both do, is the incidental characters.
Yes.
I mean, whether it's the driver in the truck singing along to the music, or the copy guy who is basically in a little one-act play that T.J. Miller could have written, where he's just like the hapless stoner dude who just wants to be left alone in his copy shop, but is smart enough to realize he can extract another $100 from Jimmy.
Yeah.
Right.
That was a great little scene, and that character was a very memorable small character.
Right.
I love how that reinforces like that Jimmy actually has this guy. Once this guy is actually going to not only take the money but negotiate for more, then he's going to follow through.
Yeah, yeah.
The kind of person who will do that. Yeah, they'll go to bat for you.
Yeah, yeah. I knew he wasn't going to crack or anything.
Yeah.
I guess once he was basically telling Chuck to fuck off, he started helping the other person. But, the whole lighting sickness stuff or the electricity, allergic allergy or whatever. You thought he was going to end up like maybe falling on Ernesto and just being.
Yeah, I thought Ernesto was going to carry him on. That was it.
And it was like that, but the whole hitting his head and the way.
Here's a question: Do you guys think he's dead?
No,
I wouldn't rule it out.
Well,
them, they're suddenly shockingly just off because we're only one episode from the end of the season, right?
Right.
One or two? Are we one?
This was the ultimate.
I could 100% see them killing him off.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. How else do you get rid of him for? The Saul,
I could see them having him
in a coma.
Oh man!
And Jimmy has to now care for that.
Here's a little aside about Chuck and the selfishness thing.
Right.
Chuck's ego won't allow him to acknowledge that it might be a mental issue, that it most likely is a mental issue.
Right.
And the best thing for him would be to go to a psychiatric hospital and try to get this treated.
Right.
He's so arrogant that he can't believe that it's actually a mental issue. And so all of this inconvenience he does of his partners and himself and Jimmy and everybody else is ultimately a selfishness of not being able to admit his own weakness.
Well, it's interesting because you see, like, okay, I have a student who's on the spectrum, right?
Yeah.
Very Asperger-y, right? And it's like, and he's diagnosed, and he's brilliant. He's a really, but he's very fucking quirky. He gets up and walks around. He yells at people. You know, it's like, but you put up with it because it's like, yeah, but he does his work, and he's actually not a behavior problem. So it's okay. Right. But it can be annoying. And I figure Chuck, for as brilliant as he is, also why he's just kind of pinpointed on that. I know I didn't fuck up the date. I know I didn't do it. That kind of thing is very spectrum-y. And, you know, you're also very, when you're on the spectrum, also you're very sensory, like certain things irritate your skin, certain feels or whatever. Mm-hmm. So if somehow we found out he was on the spectrum and really
mildly sociopathic, not very in tune to the emotions of people like Jimmy.
Yeah, it's not, right. It's not social. I mean, it is like lacking of empathy because you just can't see the other. Because it's not malice. It's just like, I just don't understand why this bothers you.
And, I mean, like, the only person we've really ever seen him care about was that woman, his wife.
And that's why maybe whatever, however that broke down, caused a certain break because of the routine of it that he went off the deep end. But I don't know if we'll ever see that, or maybe if he's in a coma and she comes to visit. I don't know. We'll see.
So given that we see different points in the show where Jimmy takes more steps toward, I guess, the dark side, if you will. When you see this scene with Chuck, do you hold Jimmy accountable for what happens to Chuck here? Because I think it's interesting. Like, what do you think, Randy?
I don't know.
I don't. I actually don't, because it's all on Chuck, his paranoia, his illness, which I don't believe is real. I think you put 90. I mean,
it is real to some extent.
It's real to himself. But it's like a smack. But that's his fault for not getting treated earlier when people tried to get him to get treated. I think that ultimately, because what's his plan? To stay at home, even if it is physical, to stay at home until it goes away, which is not happening.
Right.
His plan, he has no plan. He's just going to keep pushing himself when he hasn't bothered to find a way to treat it. But I believe that there's some responsibility to Jimmy, because Jimmy got him worked up to the point where he goes looking for this, because Jimmy stabbed him in his pride, which is the worst thing you could do to Chuck. Like, that is the absolute worst thing you do to him, is make him look bad in a court of law.
Yeah.
I give him that is Jimmy's fault. But most of this is all on Chuck.
No.
He is the guy putting himself out there.
No, I don't agree, because basically,
I know you don't agree.
Well, part of it is, Jimmy broke the fucking law.
Yeah.
I mean, Kim was very right. Like, Jimmy can be arrested and go to jail.
Sure.
Which he's been to jail, which who bailed him out? Chuck. So,
Chuck is so heartsick about having to do this that he goes out of his way to arrest his brother.
Because it could be the final straw. I mean, whatever it is, it doesn't matter how big the business is. It doesn't matter, about Kim. It matters that Chuck was it's like hitting somebody. It'd be like me, if you were in a hospital, me breaking in your fucking comic book store. You hit a guy when he's really fucking down.
Is this the first time that Jimmy actually betrayed Chuck that we've seen?
I think Chuck views everything as betrayals.
But as far as, like, maliciously, from our point of view, like,
we
he
don't
goes
know
after
yet.
Him and he forges stuff.
We don't know that.
But that we've seen, yes.
But the first we've seen, but based on the story and based on what you see, what Jimmy did with his dad, I think it's happened before, not to Chuck directly, but Chuck knows that what Jimmy's capable
of. Like, the only other place where we've seen, we've seen Chuck screw over Jimmy a couple times. Like,
the big one, he screwed him over.
Yeah, he screwed him over in his job.
Right.
And he's belittled him, and he's he's kind of screwed him over and yet taken advantage of him.
Right.
And allowed his brother to coddle him and do all this stuff for him.
Right.
He's been delivering this stuff for well over a year, all the food and everything.
Yeah. Right.
And then he just kind of tells Jimmy to fuck off.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Chuck was a dickhead. But
yeah, Chuck is a dickhead. But thing. The interesting thing is the contrast between us, between Jimmy and Walt,
right,
is that the way that Walt was going to get caught on the cigarette thing was always going to be Walt's ego.
Right.
Walt's ego was going to lead him to tell Jesse about it. You knew that that's where that was coming from.
Yeah.
That's Jimmy was never going to crack. Mm-hmm. Jimmy would never have told Chuck or Kim about that. The foible came from the outside because Chuck and Kim are both smart enough that they were going to see right through it. It's a different thing. It's not his ego. His ego wasn't doing it in the first place.
But that's also because Jimmy's big flaw is that he's not as slick as he thinks he is. Because everybody knows you're an asshole and you're slick and you're a scam artist.
Yeah.
Because of just all the little things. Well, I kind of do this, I kind of do that. And the way you act. And also, I mean, like the video.
Yeah.
The fact that you do the video that way. It's like, okay, then what else is not sacred to
you? I love Kim going to bat for him, though.
Yeah.
Even though she
Why do you think she does it? Why does she do it?
Because she...
Legally.
It's just because she loves him and she doesn't want to get him in trouble?
I think it's that, and I think in the end she needs the business. I don't know
if she did it just for the business. I think she did it more for Jimmy.
I think she did it for both reasons.
I don't think so. I think she would have given the business up in a heartbeat if she could have done it ethically.
She could have turned Jimmy in.
That's the thing. I think she cares about Jimmy more than the business. She doesn't want.
She's not the guy who would go to those lengths.
If she could somehow have gotten Jimmy away from, if she could have said to Chuck, look, I'll make this right. Just don't prosecute Jimmy. You can have the business back. She would have done it.
But
I believe that Kim doesn't want the business she wants it the right way.
But I think she also believed in what she said to Chuck.
Like, she did.
Like,
that
look,
Chuck's been a dick to him all these years.
You've always been this way to him. You've always looked down on him, and he's sacrificed everything
but
for
this,
you.
You know what is going to be great? Because you know it's going to happen. Jimmy's going to do it to her, and she'll be done with him. Because that's why she's not there with the Saul transformation.
He's going to compromise their overall business.
Right, and
I think it's going to be worse than that. Right. I think something's going to happen to Kim as a result of all this.
Right, and that's
going to be way worse than this.
She could end up going to jail.
Bad is going to happen to her, and Jimmy's going to have to carry that, and that's going to lead him to put the armor of Saul on so he can't beat Jimmy
anymore.
Yeah,
like, but I think she gets busted for it, but then Jimmy... like doesn't do the right thing and just kind of backs off.
I
take the fall.
She's not going to die. She's going to disappear. And I think in the future, we're going to come back to Jimmy in two seasons from now.
Yeah.
We're going to do in the main timeline and he's going to go back and try and win her over. He's going to be running through an airport. There's going to be like some Bruce Springsteen song playing.
He's going to be chased down by a pair of cops played by TJ Miller and, and Alana Glazer.
Yeah. See, I think she goes to jail and he could stop it, but doesn't. And
I'm putting my money on Kim gets killed.
Man, we love talking about this show.
Yep.
Too much, because we got to move on.
Yep.
We got two other shows that we promised people we were going to discuss.
Yes.
That is, let's go to Togetherness first.
Mm.
So this is over.
I'm sad.
Yes. Season 2, last season. They wrapped up the storylines. They brought the characters back together.
Yep. Yeah.
I loved this show. I love this show so much.
I think it does such a great job of like really examining these damaged characters and keeping it really grounded.
Yeah.
But the ending and where it was going, and then also just the like Amanda Peet's character, and even
oh man, I loved that beat though. Like the whole discussion.
You mean do you have a condom beat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the whole discussion about the sperm thing, we ended up filling in the rest of the blanks of that conversation with what everything was implied. And I was they did a great job of the writing.
Is this too convenient? Too convenient?
Sometimes things work out.
It was a series finale, and I'll give them leeway on it.
They didn't know it was series finale.
That's the thing. They already started working on season three.
It works out great.
Yeah, it works out. Except... the two lead characters, Melanie Lynskey and Mark. Is it Mark?
Brett.
Brett.
I'm thinking Mark Duplass.
Yeah, Brett and
Michelle.
I always know their actors' names, but Brett and Michelle get their sort of their slightly happy ending. They get together again. They're there for their kids. All that stuff. I want to see season 3. I want to see, because you know that's not just going to end well. They're going to have to go to counseling. Right. I want to see those two in marriage counseling.
Right.
And see how they deal with the fact that both of them slept with someone else.
Right.
That they sort of took a break from their marriage. That they both came back to it on their own terms. I want to see all that explored. I'm bummed we're never going to see it.
It certainly felt rushed, that scene. But I thought that despite it being rushed, they executed pretty well.
Oh no, I loved it. It's a good ending. It's kind of like it's almost like where Terriers ended. It's not that it's a bad ending. It's like I get it perfectly. I can picture in my mind exactly where the rest of the show goes, but I wanted to see it.
It was just more uplifting than I expected for a show that really wallows in grief.
And I didn't want it to be uplifting. I didn't want it to be because it would have been more realistic if it wasn't.
Oh man, I would have been bummed if they'd gone with a more real. I mean, they ended season one on very much a down note,
right?
Yeah,
but in season two they didn't, and I liked that.
But to me, it's kind of like
even that director got his redemption. He went to jail for him.
Yeah,
that was a great moment.
If this is where we leave the show, I love that, and I love the fact that dude was terrible.
Yes,
so hard on it.
Right.
And then it was like that's really bad.
Well,
really
okay.
Bad. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
you guys had to have teared up when little girl comes over to the guys. I mean, Grant, because Grant's a robot.
No. Right.
But when she goes to the kids and she's like, "You want to go to another planet?" That was great.
Okay, see now, okay, this
was great.
This is where
I hate kid actors. I just hate it.
No, actually, I thought her best scene was she was pissed off about them not coming. I thought that was really cool. Getting in the hospital.
Every line delivered by that little girl.
My thing, and just it was so realistic. I tried to suspend some belief, but the whole charter school thing, the way it set it up, was like this is total bullshit.
And there's no way that's gonna happen. Yeah,
no way it's gonna happen. There's no curriculum. That was driving me nuts.
Yeah, everyone's going with the French.
You've gotta assume there's a little bit. I mean, if you want to read it, Greg, you can read this as all of it's a dream sequence at the end. Like the whole charter school thing, like her getting back. This is all Michelle's dream of how everything worked out.
Right.
Right after she saw her husband with
he would sleep with someone so he could get back together.
I think that's what it was. It's like, this is all, she had the big fight with him. She goes home and goes to sleep and then dreams the last episode. Right. That's your dark ending.
And they wake up with Bob Newhart.
And then she wakes up with Bob Newhart.
That's pretty great. You made it even better, Randy.
See now, okay. But I wanted to see how shit fell apart in season three. That's what I did want to see. And like, I just can't see Amanda Peet becoming the mother she thinks she's going to be. She's got too much damage, you know? And also she just left, Peter Gallagher. What happened with that? And then now Alex happens to be a rich guy because he got offered $1 million to do this TV show.
Yeah, and did he pass that up?
Yeah, he passed it up.
I couldn't tell if he passed it up.
I just thought he
passed it up for Dune, I think.
No, I think it just was kind of there. Insane. I don't think he passed it up.
I got the impression he turned it down.
I had the impression
I wasn't sure how fast the timeline rushed between time or if it was just like within a week we threw those.
I don't think that was resolved. I really don't think that was resolved.
Okay.
Because it's like there's no way in hell he would pass up that money.
Well, we'll find out in season three.
Or maybe not. So I mean,
I want to say I didn't realize the woman who was playing the sort of charter school woman,
I did. We had to look it up.
I knew she was familiar and I loved her.
Yes.
It's Katie Esselstyn from The League, and I love her.
That's Mark Duplass's wife, too.
Yes, I love her.
It killed me to, like, right after we watched it, Helene and I were like, who is she? It's driving us nuts. We went to IMDb for like an hour to try to find out. I'm like, okay, I see her. Like,
I didn't recognize her in the first episode.
Because
first
of the blonde
episode,
hair.
The small thing.
Yeah.
But the second episode I saw her and I was like, oh, it's her.
Yeah, because of the blonde hair. She looks so different with blonde.
She's so great.
She acted differently. So it's like, it was really, really cool. So,
but you know what I love? And I mentioned this sort of earlier, the slobs versus snobs things that I grew up on.
Mm.
You know, the Revenge of the Nerds, all that kind of thing.
Right.
That's to some extent what the League has always been, like slobs versus snobs.
Right.
Togetherness did that. These guys were the slobs, and she was the charter school French snob. And so I was plugged into that reality where the slobs win despite all the odds.
But from an education point of view, her thing was bullshit too.
Oh, it was ridiculous.
Anything based on.
This is why you guys never get along.
Right. And people are going to hate this, but this okay. One thing we should mention on the dad thing, I will say, do not send your kids to Montessori preschool. Don't. Because it fucks them up for school. Trust me. Kids, Montessori, I know they do some good things, but actually structured how to teach the cats how to work does not do it. And
also,
that other thing
don't
was
sleep
like,
with your Uber driver because that's probably going to back. Certainly don't kiss her in front of your wife.
Right.
That's probably not a good idea.
Right.
I try not to all the time.
Yeah.
But I wanted to see the tension between her and Alex.
My driver, he's really good looking.
But I wanted to see the tension between her and Alex, because I thought that worked out. That would have been really, really cool.
Yeah.
Or if she got pregnant, like if she was going to go with that, if What's-Her-Face was going to go with that Amanda Peet's character. Yeah, Tina was going to go with that guy she just met and get pregnant, and then, you know, Alex would have to help raise the kid.
Because you know that's what would have happened. Yeah.
That would have been interesting to me. I was like, oh, kind of fucked up.
I think his short memory of like how terrible she was for a while.
Yeah, that bothered me. I'm sorry. It's
you're still attracted to her.
Keep in mind, guys, he's been in love with this girl for so long.
You're right.
That
he's
been overlooking her flaws for 20 years.
That is a
fair enough.
That's a very excellent point. Very good.
So
point.
The show is gone. What do you guys? Did you guys feel it fit the HBO?
Yes, I'm actually surprised.
I really did. I thought this was really good. I tweeted at HBO. Give me Togetherness back, and I'll start watching Vinyl.
Wow, that's
good. You should. That's very
that's
good.
Pretty kind of you.
Duplass. he should have, or both of them. They should have. They should have retweeted that.
And the thing is, they clearly were not done. They've been very politic about it because they got a deal with HBO.
Well, they still got animals.
I read a little bit of pissed about this. Were happy about this. And Melanie Lynskey was tweeting about how she was having trouble. She's like, I keep thinking about it and I keep crying because I really want to do more of this show. I love these characters.
Right.
And I really am bummed that it's been a long time. There's been a lot of think pieces written about how this doesn't happen in peak TV. Shows don't get canceled. House of Lies is on season 5. This doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But it happened, and it was a shocker.
HBO.
This is a rarity, and I would rather it happen to shows I hate.
Do you think Togetherness is going to suddenly build up a cult following?
No.
It's so. Utterly forgotten.
You know what they did it with? They did it with...
Needs more aliens.
But yeah. They did it with...
They did Dune.
What they did it with that... this is terrible. The gay show from San Francisco, they did, which is actually pretty good.
Looking?
They did it with Looking, too. I'm surprised they canceled that.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know.
I'm really bummed. I really like the show. And I saw Alan Sepinwall wrote a great piece, and he mentioned that one of the problems with Togetherness was that it has a bunch of stuff in the similar genre. Love, Flaked. I'm trying to think what else there's. Girls.
Best show of that is
You're the Worst.
You're the Worst. That's
and
the best show.
You're the Worst is the only show of that category that I wouldn't have sacrificed to have Togetherness back.
Now, the thing, you know what I would sacrifice that they should get rid of is Married. If that Married comes back again, which totally.
Married's gone. Married got canceled.
Good, because that show went totally off the deep end.
They were saying, he was saying that sort of the problems of married white 20-somethings having ennui or 30-something having ennui, it's covered. That genre's covered. And he's not wrong. It's just that this was doing a better job than so many other shows.
Well, it would have been interesting if she did go with John Ortiz.
Well, I want to see what Zissis does next. I thought he was great. I want to see what Melanie Lynskey does next because I got a huge crush on her.
Right.
And I'm sure the Duplass brothers, hopefully what they do next at HBO will be more.
Do you think they're going to do more stuff?
They're already doing deal. Animals.
I just thought maybe their careers were over. No one thinks that.
You know what, Grant? They did two more things while you said that sentence.
I know. Right. They're so perfect.
Yeah. I just hope the next thing they do is more Togetherness and less animals.
And right about here is where we ended up losing the audio for Billions. This is where we transitioned into discussing it. But like I said at the beginning of the episode, it is no longer here. We are going to come back next week and discuss Billions as well as a few other shows. Once again, we wanted to thank everyone for listening, checking us out, and all of your support over at iTunes, over at Patreon. We really appreciate it. Until next week, TV Dudes out. I fly like paper, get high like planes. If you catch me at the border, I got visas in my name. If you come around, hey, I'll make a more day. I get one down in a second if you wait. I fly like paper, get high like planes. If you catch me at the border, I got visas in my name. If you come around, hey, I'll make a more day. I get one down in a second if you wait. Sometimes I think sitting on trains. Every stop I get to, I'm clocking that game. Everyone's a winner, we're making our fame. Bonafide hustler, making my name. Sometimes I think sitting on trains. Every stop I get to, I'm clocking that game. Everyone's a winner, we're making our fame. Bonafide hustler, making my name. Yeah, my
bridges, pumping night gas.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast. It is exclusively listener-supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TVDudes. You can like us on Facebook and on Twitter at TV Dudes, and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.